father in law. He wasn't a father in law.
Love Talk Radio.
The age of parents.
Now, from the world's most famous beach, from where beach racing began, it's the Legends of Racing radio show, live from Racing's North Turn Beach Bar and Grill in Ponce Inlet, Florida. The Legends of Racing radio show, and your host.
You know, something might happen. Something could happen.
Yeah.
But that's the way that's the way it was. Money was tight, yeah. Anybody to take me to the race, yeah. I was all for it.
Interesting. We're going to take a break for just a second. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
The caution flag is out. Time for a break. We'll be right back with the Legends of Racing radio show. Welcome to Homewood Suites by Hilton in Daytona Beach. You're right in the middle of all the action. Daytona International Speedway, the airport, One Daytona, Florida's newest entertainment and retail destination, and of course, the world's most famous beach. You'll love our newly remodeled 1 and 2 bedroom suites, along with our popular King Studios. You won't need your full kitchen, as Homewood Suites Daytona serves up complimentary breakfast and evening social. It's like home away from home. Go to homewooddaytona.com for Homewood Suites by Hilton in Daytona Beach. We're back from where it all began. Racing's original North Turn Beach Bar and Grill. The Legends of Racing radio show continues with your host, Buzz McKim.
Thank you very much, everyone. Appreciate that. We're here with Jack Cook Sr., and we're kind of walking back in time to the days of what I think is the glory days of motorcycle racing. And I find it amazing. Here you were just a kid from Daytona, and you go to watch a race, and you get a ride on a motorcycle, and within 2 seasons, you're riding for the factory Harley team. That's an incredible story.
Well, to continue on, Tommy Morris rode out of Jacksonville. I rode out of Daytona, or out of Orlando. We were both amateurs. We would go to a race, and there wouldn't be enough expert riders there to make up a full field. Mm-hmm. So they would put Tommy and I in with the experts. And we didn't beat them all, but we beat most of them. And there was a lot of contention there. A lot of them didn't like that.
Yeah.
But we were there for the money. We could run in the top 5 an expert and make more money than we could win in the amateur.
Really?
So Tommy and I both, we jumped on it. Boy, yeah. we were there. We were, but I didn't think at the time about the points. I wouldn't get any points for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed amateur until 54. In 1954, I got enough points. I had the points to make amateur. I would have been an expert in 55. And I went to Savannah and broke my collarbone.
Oh, jeez.
And that ended my motorcycle career.
Did it really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of the financial end of it. If I hadn't had George Johnson as a good friend,
mm-hmm.
and he took me in, moved me into his house,
mm-hmm.
and kept me and paid my bills, made my car payment, and,
wow.
and until I recovered.
Yeah.
I had plenty of time to think about it, and I'm thinking, this is not going to work. So that was the end of the motorcycle career. The most fun I had motorcycle racing was at Memorial Stadium in Daytona.
Yes.
They had a weekly program for small bikes, the little Harley Hummers and mm-hmm. 165s. And George had a bike. Dick O'Brien was working on it. And we dominated that racetrack.
Is that right?
Dick O'Brien built a... He called it a cooling jacket. He cut all the fins off a cylinder, and he had this sleeve that he slipped over there with more fins and longer fins and thinner fins to, mm-hmm. to cool them. I also made a head for it that had tire fins and cooling.
Huh.
So we go out to the race, and we won the race. And they told me that I couldn't run that head. I couldn't run that head. They wanted to, well, they wanted to see the head. We wouldn't let them look at it, but we took it off, and they said we couldn't run the head. Came back the next week, didn't have the head, but still had the cooling jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Won the race, couldn't run the cooling jacket.
Oh, gee.
Okay, so we went to the junkyard, got a head and a cooler, and cleaned them up, and Dick came back, won the race.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they disqualified the head, they disqualified the cylinder.
Right.
But being as I was at that time, I put a little copper pipe coming from the bottom of the gas tank through the coil bracket and down into the between the cooling pins on the head.
Right.
Nothing but a little copper pipe, not connected to anything. Well, that became a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
The promoter comes over and he says, where is that bike with the pipe on the head? I said, it's on the truck. I want to see it. So we go out there. Now, we had made a big thing. We had the bike all covered up, and we kept it. We didn't unload it until time to race.
Yeah.
And we went out, and one of the other riders pulled up beside me, and I put my knee up, my leg up, so he couldn't see it. Well, it was just a joke. But it was a bad joke because I showed him the pipe, and I said, that's just there to make fools ask questions.
Yeah.
I was outlawed. I couldn't race there anymore.
Oh, man, you were outlawed.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. The promoter didn't like it. He didn't. And
son
it was just a bad
man.
Joke.
Was there anything illegal about it?
What?
Was there anything illegal about what you did?
No.
No? They just didn't like outsiders coming in, right?
But it was a big issue for them.
Yeah.
But like anything else, I dominated it, and it was fun.
Wow.
It was fun.
That's amazing. Well, how'd you like racing with Paul Goldsmith? He's one of my heroes.
Paul Goldsmith is my hero.
Is he really?
You won't find a better, nicer guy than Paul Goldsmith.
Well, Smokey Unico always said that of all the people that drove for him, Paul knew more about a car than anybody else had ever raced for one.
Now, the factory bike, they had factory engineers there working on those bikes.
Mm-hmm.
They did not touch my bike. They did not touch Paul Goldsmith's bike.
Oh,
Paul Goldsmith was doing all the work on those two bikes.
Okay, hold on a second here, Jack. We have someone on the phone. Hello there. Who do we have?
You got Dick Bergeron, Buzz. Good morning. Or good afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Dick Bergeron. How about that stuff? That's great. How you doing, Dick?
Well, I'd be doing a lot better if I was at the North Turn restaurant ordering a Russ Truelove.
Yeah. I'll bet you're a little cooler up there than we are down here.
I'm afraid we are, and we've also got a little bit of rain, but I'll be in Daytona in a couple of weeks, and I'm looking forward to getting there.
Oh, that's great. We'll be looking forward to seeing you, too. You know, so many folks have admired your journalism, your broadcasting, and all that sort of thing, but I bet a lot of folks don't know that you also had a heck of a driving career. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I don't know if it was a heck of a driving career. There were more than a few crashes as I tried to learn how to do that business of going fast without hitting anything. But I raced pretty much what you got here in New England, stock cars, super modified sprint cars.
Wow.
I never won a race on asphalt. All the races that I won were on dirt. And that should tell you something about my skill level. Could only succeed on one kind of surface. But I had a sprint car that went real well. Doug Gore, who's passed on since, took care of it for me. And he and I just clicked as a team. And we won a lot of races. We won 20 races together over the course of a five-year period before I tried to kill myself in the car and almost accomplished it.
Yeah, so, I mean, you really know the sport from the inside out. That I think that's what makes your stuff so authentic and so fascinating. And we're just tickled that you took time to give us a shout. You finished up a kind of a pet project here recently. You have a museum up in New Hampshire now, don't you?
Well, actually, all of us in New England have the museum. This is a 501c3 nonprofit, so it basically is owned by the public. And the museum is right on the property of New Hampshire Motor Speedway. And indeed, I'm calling you from the museum today. We've got a major event going on here tomorrow. This museum is all about New England motorsports and all kinds of New England motorsports. So tomorrow we honor three of drag racing's most successful personalities here at the museum. We've got drag cars here, road race cars. We've even got the Jeff Bodine bobsled is here.
Wow.
And asphalt cars, dirt cars, motorcycles. We've had a snowmobile in here, all sorts of things. And we usually have between 25 and 30 cars on the floor. Right now there's fewer because we've got the room set up to have our event tomorrow. But there's a lot of variety. A lot of trophies are here. We've got a trophy case that's 8 feet high, 25 feet long, and it's jam full. We've got a nice helmet display and a very thorough library, which is the thing I'm the most proud about. We've got over 600 bound volumes and lots of auto racing magazines complete from beginning to end.
Wow, that is fantastic. I didn't realize it was so, you know, I guess you could call it widespread, huh?
Well, it's widespread in terms of the disciplines here, but it's very narrow in that we've got a little bit from eastern New York State here, but almost everything that's in this museum is New England-centric. Of course, some of the stuff that we have is with people who have lived in New England and then gone on elsewhere. So we've got the car Joey Logano won his very first cup race in.
Here,
and the trophy he won that day, that's here as well.
Well, that's super. So much talent came out of that area, and you know, you guys really have cranked out the stars over the years. If anybody wants to donate anything to your facility, how would they contact you?
Probably the best way to do it is with our email address, nemsmuseum@gmail.com. nemsmuseum@gmail.com. They can contact us there, and we can figure out what to do. We do get a lot of offers for a lot of stuff, and as long as it's New England, it's welcome here. If it's not, if it's just racing, probably another museum would be a better source of it. If they want to send cash to help us pay the bills around here, that's fine, too.
Oh, terrific. Well, that's great. Well, we just applaud you for what you're doing. That area certainly deserved a museum of its own, and I couldn't think of anybody else better than to oversee it. And we're just tickled to death to be a part of what you do, and we're tickled to be for you to be a part of what we do. And we're going to get together one of these days, right?
I'm looking forward to that, Buzz, yes.
Thank you so much, Dick. Have a big round of applause for Dr. Dick Bergeron. Thanks so much. Take care.
Thank you.
Yeah, and well, what I've seen of that museum is absolutely tremendous. If you're ever up that way, you got to stop by and check it out. In fact, probably during Speed Week, we'll have one of the original members, one of the original inductees, Georgie Summers, appear on stage, too. He's one of the real pioneers of New England modified racing, and he was one of the first three. It was Bug Stevens, George Summers, and Ron Bouchard were the first three that were inducted. So now back to Jack Cook. And I cannot imagine what it was like to race on the beach with a motorcycle. Did you get a lot of sand in your face and everything?
Yes. Yes. And it was an exciting experience.
Now, I remember seeing pictures of a platform, an observation platform that was on the south turn, and it was held up by telephone poles. And for the motorcycle races, they would wrap the telephone poles in mattresses. Do you remember that?
Yes.
You never tried out one of those mattresses, did you?
No.
Oh, good.
No. But I do remember going to the south turn and being passed by a couple of bikes when we broke for the turn. And there was a little path, just nothing but like a wagon trail.
Right.
A two-lane going from the end of the road, going, I guess, to the inlet. And a couple of them went down that road.
Oh, did they really? Did you ever see anybody go off of that drop that they had there in the south turn?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a yee-haw moment, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Amazing. Now, coming through the north turn here, did it get pretty rough?
Only coming in right off the beach and going right onto the beach at south turn. And that's where I had my advantage because I was here. I lived here. I rode the beach almost every day. And and a lot of them high-sided right here. Right down here.
Oh, yeah. So you got to come down and practice anytime you wanted to then, right?
Yeah.
A little home field advantage, you might say.
Home field advantage.
Now, are you a native of Daytona?
Do what?
Are you a native of Daytona Beach?
No. I was born in, until I was 12 years old, I was on a cotton tobacco and front and tobacco farm in South Central Georgia.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, where about? I got a daughter in Vidalia. Anywhere near there?
That's Tift County, Georgia.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Tifton, Eddie McDonald.
Eddie McDonald.
Yes, sir, Mr. Eddie. That's really something.
In 1942, World War II, my father was doing, he was, they built an airport for training.
Mm-hmm.
The first one he worked at was Moultrie, Georgia, Spencefield at Moultrie, Georgia. And he had a crew that did all the groundwork and planted the grass around the runways, taxiways, and this and that and the other.
Mm-hmm.
So he had stopped, he had quit farming, went to work for that. He worked at Moultrie, he worked at Tallahassee, Dale Mabry, Carabelle at that amphibious training thing at Carabelle.
Yep.
So we had moved to Florida in 42.
Mm-hmm.
In 45, the end of the war, everything just stopped. All that construction industry quit.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved to Daytona in 1945, and I've been here since 1945.
We're going to take a break for a second. We have a message from one of our sponsors. We'll be back in just a minute.
The caution flag is out. Time for a break. We'll be right back with the Legends of Racing radio show. Racing's original North Turn is our broadcast headquarters. If you're looking for a good drink, great entertainment, and the best in food, they're right on the beach at Racing's Original North Turn. Rhonda and Walt invite you to come on down to dinner tonight. Here are a couple of testimonials. These are actual testimonials from people who have enjoyed the North Turn. Been there many times, always great food and drinks, great location on the beach. And another, what a great experience. It's my new favorite restaurant in the Daytona Beach area, Racing's Original North Turn on South Atlantic Avenue. That's A1A in Ponce Inlet, about 3.2 miles south of the Dunlawton Bridge and A1A intersection. It's Racing's Original North Turn, a restaurant, museum, bar, gift shop, live music. That's Racing's North Turn. Racing's North Turn has been voted by you top 10 beach bar 7 years in a row. Next year, they're going for top five. We're back from where it all began. Racing's Original North Turn Beach Bar and Grill. The Legends of Racing radio show continues with your host, Buzz McKim.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate that so much. Hope you're enjoying yourself here at the North Turn. And we're here with Jack Cook today. And we've been through the motorcycle aspect of his career. We're going to get into the auto racing aspect here in just a minute. But take a little break here for Buzz McKim Racing Art. This Indian, Native American back here, he wasn't really a race driver. He might have been on the front of the Pontiacs back in the old days. I'm not sure. But anyway, this... Yeah, every week we bring another painting in of something that I have done in the past. This was done back around 1970, and it took about 2 hours, actually. I just sat down, saw the picture in Life magazine, said, my gosh, what a great face. I love the contrast between the darks and the lights. And so actually I've had some people claim that it was a photograph, and that's probably the highest praise I could get. I said, no, it's not a photograph, it's a painting. So anyway, we just thought we'd bring the old Chief Rain in the Face there in today and show him off a little bit, and we'll have another racing-themed piece of artwork next week. So get a chance to go to Buzz McKim Racing Art and see what we're up to. Anyway, enough for the commercial. But could you have ever imagined how quickly your motorcycle career could have gained steam? I mean, you went from nothing to factory in a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the motorcycle career, I quit racing for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple of friends that moved down here from Tennessee. And they had been racing in Tennessee. And apparently, according to them, they were pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're always going to tell you they're pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So they came down, and one of them had a race car. And he was going to, they decided they'd run over at Sunbrock Speedway.
Uh-huh.
And they were going to go over there and show everybody how to race. And I said, hey, I've been there. They're running pretty dadgum good over there. I said, y'all up in pretty stiff competition over there.
Yeah, this will be
No, nah, that's all right. We'll show them how. So they went to the race, and the guy that owned the car, one of them drove it in practice, the other one drove it in the first race.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one of them wanted any more of that.
Yeah.
So they physically picked me up and put me in the car to run the feature. I didn't know a thing about racing a race car. I had no idea what I was doing. I parked it in the fence between turn one and two. But that was the beginning of my racing automobiles.
Yeah.
It got me interested. So I went over to Orlando Sunbrock one night for the races, and there was a guy that I had known from all galley, had a garage, and he had a little car there, and he was trying to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it, and I don't remember who was with me, but we looked at it, and I had a 1942 Ford Coupe that I drove to work.
Mm-hmm.
I traded that 1942 Ford Coupe for that race car at Sunbrock Speedway. He took it back to Ogalle Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
I went down there Sunday. I don't remember who pulled it home for me, but we went down and picked it up and brought it home.
Uh-huh.
First race was over at DeLand Speedway, the old DeLand Speedway out behind the prison out west of DeLand.
The old fairgrounds, right. Yeah.
So I'm a race car driver. We're going to go over here and win this thing. Well, I knew Ray Fox knew me from a motorcycle race, and Ray Fox had come out to the house and looked at it. Out at Joel Johnson's house, that's where I kept it. And he looked it over and he said, Jack, that steering is not heavy enough.
Uh-huh.
He said, you need to beef up that steering.
Yep.
Okay. We'll go race and make some money. I'll beef up the steering.
Yeah.
That was my fault. I didn't tell Ray that.
Right.
So I go over to DeLand. Time trials. Practice was okay. Time trials. Apparently, I was going pretty good because the announcer said this is going to be the track fastest time.
Oh, my.
And he was counting the seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So I go down to the back stretch, turn to go into turn three. The steering arm falls off, and I sail off of turn three.
Oh, no.
Nosed into the ground, and that was the end of my race car.
Oh, my gosh. Totals? Totals, huh?
Totals.
Yeah.
Totally. But then George Johnson took the engine and the running gear, and he built the car, and that's when we started racing.
Mm-hmm.
I was very fortunate. I knew Ray Fox, Smokey Unick, Marvin Patch
yeah.
later, but
yeah. Marshall Teague, right?
Fireball, Marshall Teague, Red Volts, mm-hmm. knew all those guys.
Right.
Smokey had a soft spot for me because Smokey started out racing motorcycles too.
That's right.
That's where his Smokey name came from, the Castrol. the bike smokes so bad.
Uh-huh.
Here comes Smokey. But Smokey had a soft spot for me, and I lived next one house between myself and Marshall Teague.
Oh, boy.
And I knew them all.
Uh-huh.
And I knew him well enough that Ray came and looked at the car and mm-hmm. told me that I needed to beef up that steering,
right.
which I didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
George built his first car. We took it to DeLand. Marshall Teague came over there, looked it all over, and there was some little something that it didn't amount to anything, but
mm-hmm.
that he told me that I needed to take care of. And
mm-hmm.
But it was that kind of relationship.
Wow.
For some reason, they liked me, and I had every opportunity to be with the very best.
Wow.
But I was busy. I was around chasing girls.
Well, nothing wrong with that.
And but then George built a car. We had a little success with it at DeLand.
Mm-hmm.
We ran it at Ocala quite a bit and ran pretty good there. It was a flathead Ford V8.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good fast car, and we were
mm-hmm.
pretty much top dog at Ocala for a year mm-hmm. or two.
What was that, a little coupe?
A coupe.
Yeah. Huh?
And Emil Ruderman.
Oh yeah.
Came up from Tampa. They the promoter over there would invite these guys to come out and run me.
Uh-huh.
And most of them did.
Oh, they did.
Well, Emil Ruderman came up there with a little yeah. six cylinder Chevrolet. A GMC.
That's right.
And I chased him the whole day.
Uh-huh.
a little later on, the promoter over there wrote a letter to David Easel's bunch at Kelly's. Kelly had a drive-in out there west of Jacksonville. He had a car. David Easel had a car up there. They were the hot dogs up there.
Uh-huh.
But they were running in the Carolinas.
Right.
So the promoter in Ocala writes a letter to them and invites them to come down and race me because I got the fastest flathead in the South. Signed the name to it.
Uh-huh.
Well, they came down there with me.
Oh, gee.
And they got me.
Gotcha. Now, were they running overheads?
In Ocala.
Yeah, and they ran overheads and you were still running your flathead?
They were running overheads mm-hmm. and I was still running the flathead.
I'll be darned.
Emil Ruderman was running a straight six GMC.
Yeah. Oh, he ran those for years. We're going to take a break just for a second. Another word from our sponsor. Here we go.
The caution flag is out. Time for a break. We'll be right back with the Legends of Racing radio show. At Beach Boys Embroidery and Tees, it's all about making you happy. Beach Boys Embroidery can customize your athletic golf apparel, caps, hats, badges, buttons, magnets, backpacks, bags, totes, clocks, watches, oh, and of course, T-shirts. Sure, they're at 2033 South Ridgewood Avenue in South Daytona, and they're waiting for you to call now, 386-255-5880. Beach Boys Embroidery and Tees. We're back from where it all began. Racing's original North Turn Beach Bar and Grill. The Legends of Racing radio show continues with your host, Buzz McKim.
Hey, thank you so much. That's great. Yeah, don't forget Beach Boys Embroideries and Tees for all your embroidery needs. I knew a guy that had his underwear embroidered. Now, that's somebody who had a bit of an ego, you know? Yeah, well, anyway. Hey, but you got into stock car racing. What would that be, in the late 50s, somewhere around there?
That was in I stopped motorcycle racing in 54, so that had
okay.
to be 55, 56.
I see.
And 57.
Yeah.
The overhead Chevrolets and Fords were coming out. Most people were running those Chevrolets,
right.
and we were staying with the old flathead.
Yeah.
That's what we knew, and that's what we stuck with it.
Yep.
And at Ocala, Bob Luscombe.
Oh, yeah.
From Tampa.
Uh-huh.
He had a straight six Chevrolet.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he would come up to Ocala on Saturday night, and he and I were pretty good competitors.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, the fastest cars or the heat, winners of the heats or the high point cars always went to the back in the feature.
That's how it should
started
be.
Started at the back.
Yeah.
25th, 29th, wherever, however many was there, we were at the back.
Uh-huh.
Well, Luscombe, if he got the break through the traffic, he won the race.
Mm-hmm.
If I got the break through the traffic, I won the race.
And
Ocala actually had a couple of just match grud races between Bob Luscombe and I.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Bob Luscombe would go back to Tampa on Saturday night, get on the plane and go to Indiana and race midgets on Sunday.
Really?
And he practically begged me to go with him. He said, Jack, I'll get you a ride. I'll get you a good car. He said, mm-hmm. You won't believe it. He said, come on and go with me.
Wow.
I didn't have the money to go. I didn't have plane fare. I couldn't go. But that's what I'm talking about, the opportunity.
Yeah,
I had all the opportunities, but I wasn't humble enough to say, I can't buy the plane ticket.
Yeah, right.
If
right.
I had, maybe I would have got it.
Yep. Now, you had a regular job all this time,
I had
too.
A regular job.
Yeah,
and a half days a week.
What were you doing then? What kind of work were you into?
Glass.
Oh, is that right?
Glass work, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, glass. All my life was in the glass business.
Uh-huh.
And when Luscombe and I were dominating over there,
mm-hmm.
then we had the reputation of having a pretty good flathead. Mm-hmm. Well, George Johnson and Ray Fox hooked up, and they built a flathead that was the fastest flathead in the Southeast.
Is that
it was
right?
We had three fish carburetor, alcohol carburetors.
Wow.
Pressurized fuel.
Yeah.
And it was quick.
No kidding.
We took it to Orlando. We took it to Ocala first. We won the race. They let us race because of the history over there.
Mm-hmm.
They told me, don't bring it back. don't bring it back here.
Now, see, that's high praise when they tell you not to come back.
What?
That's very high praise.
Yes,
they say, you're doing so good, don't bother coming back.
We took it to Orlando, to Sunbrock. We didn't get through inspection. They didn't let us run it.
Right.
We took it to Jacksonville, and they had a super modified race.
Mm-hmm.
And they let us run it in that super modified. Now, these are had blowers on them.
Oh, wow. Really?
They were, I think there was 10 cars for the feature. There were two from Tampa that beat me.
Mm-hmm.
I was third.
Mm-hmm.
But it truly was the fastest flathead in the Southeast.
What kind of heads were you using on those? I know Ray Fox was a genius when it came to heads on flatheads.
It was AB block, flathead, bored out as big as they could bore it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that we went to Schuler in Jacksonville out of a machine shop, and he was doing most of the work.
Mm-hmm.
I had been to Schuler one time with Dick O'Brien because he was grinding cams for Dick Spice. So George and I go up, Ray told him to go up to Schuler and to get what to do, what to get, and this and that and the other. And George and I go up there one Saturday morning. We go in, introduce ourselves, tell him we're there. He said, I can't do it.
Really?
And George said, well, Ray Fox, since I can't do it. He said, well, Ray said, I don't care what Ray said, I can't do it. I told you I can't do it.
Hmm.
So we left. We went out there with our tail between our legs, and we got in the truck.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there looking at one another thinking, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
And this guy comes out the door, and he says, hey, y'all come back. Y'all come back in here a minute. So we got out of the truck, went back, and Schuler was on the phone with Ray Fox.
Uh-huh.
And he talked to Ray for a few minutes, and we stood there and waited. He hung up the phone, and he said, okay, Mr. Johnson, here it is. I got to get suck valves out of Canada. We got to do this. We got to do that. And
what?
Took a big truck valve, redid the bottom of it, and the ground, and that thing was a bear.
Oh, man.
I mean, it was a bear. If we had... Now, Ray told us where there were cracks in North Carolina that we could run the car and could run well.
Right.
But George was a full-time well driller.
Yeah.
Well drilling business. I had a full-time job. We couldn't get another
car. Yeah, sure. Now, up in Jacksonville, did you ever run against Leroy Yarborough very much?
Yes.
He was pretty good, wasn't he?
Yes, he was very good.
Yeah, he was kind of abnormally brave, he's been described.
The first time I went to Jacksonville, I think it was later on. I think I had a 56 Chevrolet.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I went up there, I think I got in Leroy's way.
Oh.
Because after the race, he was there before I got out of the car inviting me to come on.
Oh, really?
But a couple of guys got him and took him away. And
right.
There's a lot of that back in that
day. Oh, yeah. And, I remember Tiny Lund used to be pretty good up there, too.
I raced against Tiny Lund at DeLand.
Yeah.
When I went up to pass Tiny Lund, I went in there a little too hot, too fast, and I kind of pushed him out of the way in turn two.
Mm-hmm.
Three laps later, he pushed me out of the way in turn two. But we didn't wreck each other. We didn't have any problem. It was racing. It was racing. And and Tiny was he was truly a general's eye.
He was.
He was a general's eye. That was a good nickname for him.
His wife, Wanda, said that for a guy that big, he was extremely light on his feet, and he was a very good dancer. She said his feet would barely touch the ground. And he's like 6'5" and weighed 300 pounds, but she said he could sure get around. Yeah. That came in handy when you get ready to deck somebody, too, you know.
But I had stopped racing. I don't know, after that flathead business and all that, and I had stopped racing, and my boys were getting bigger. They were getting in the motocross, wanted to get in the motocross, and I worked with a guy that had a race car that was running in DeLand, and there was something about his driver that they disqualified his driver. The driver had Roland Netters was his name.
That's right.
Warner Ancelotti and him had a car. It was a 50, I think it was a 60 Chevrolet or something. Anyway, it was in the intermediate class.
Yeah.
And so Roland says, I need you to drive my car.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, what's wrong with driving? Well, they got disqualified. He can't drive. I said, yeah, I'll drive it. So I go over there, and that's the way I got back in into the 56, 57, mm-hmm. in that era with Tiny Lund and those guys. And
yeah, I remember that 60 Chevy. I remember you had a big old 348 in that thing. That was a boat anchor, wasn't it, that motor?
Yeah.
We're going to take one more break for our sponsors. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
The caution flag is out. Time for a break. We'll be right back with the Legends of Racing Radio Show. Welcome to the Janet Hale Foundation website. With this website, we hope to broaden our reach, to find someone like you to help us on our journey. Janet's journey started 40 years ago to ensure that all children had a toy under the tree at Christmas. Today, thousands of toys and clothing are donated for underprivileged kids. We need your help to continue our journey. Tour this website and find the Donate Now button. A small gesture can make a big difference in a young life. We need your help. Visit us on Facebook, Janet Hale Foundation, or call 386-256-0752. We're back from where it all began. Racing's original North Turn Beach Bar and Grill. The Legends of Racing Radio Show continues with your host, Buzz McKim.
Thank you, everybody. Broadcasting here from the North Turn Restaurant in beautiful Ponce Inlet, Florida. Beautiful and historic Ponce Inlet, Florida. And we're here with Jack Cook, who is, I've known you for so long, and there's so much more to your career than I ever knew. This is amazing. We're into the stock car section of your career now, and you just kind of made another comeback with that 60 Chevy late model, running DeLand and some of the local tracks around here.
DeLand, Bogville, Jacksonville.
Yeah. And you picked it up pretty quick, didn't you?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I think once you get that feel for a car, you never really lose it, do you?
No, you don't. No, you don't. Even as you get old. Look at Red Farmer. Is Red Farmer still racing?
That's right. Yeah, 85 years old. Yeah. He said he's going to keep racing until he gets it right.
But then that was the 56, 57, 58, that era. And then I stopped racing again. We were doing a lot of motocross. My boys were doing motocross, and we were doing a lot of motocross. And they were very successful with motocross, both of them. Both of them were outstanding.
Really? They kind of, it's in their genes, isn't it?
And yeah. And I was paying these bills, see?
Yeah.
I had two motocross bikes. I had two flat track bikes. We were going to the races every weekend, and I was struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bob Quesada, I knew him through work.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out. They had a hair scrambles thing out. Mark Heineman had it out on his property on State Road 11.
Right.
And my boys were out there on their bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Quesada and Joyce were riding out there on their bikes, and Joyce's bike ran out of gas.
Mm-hmm.
So Bob, they get on Bob's bike, and they come on up to the track, and I'm the first familiar he sees, and he says, Jack, I need some gas. Bob, Joyce's bike ran out of gas down the road.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you got any gas? I said, yeah, I got mixed. He says, no, I can't have mixed.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, hold on a minute, and I'll get you. So I emptied out a can, siphoned gas out of my car, gave it to him. He went down and got the bike, and they came on up and watched the race.
Mm-hmm.
We became very good friends. From then on, we went to the races. We'd go camp and go Saturday and race Sunday. We'd go to Orlando and race the flat track. But about the second or third race, Bob says, Jack, he says, them bikes, them boys need better equipment. I said, I know they do, Bob. And I said, I can't afford it. So he says, let's buy him a new bike.
Oh, boy.
So the first motocross bike that Jack 2 had, Bob and I went 50-50 on it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Bought it. From then on, Bob bought all of Jack's bikes.
Uh-huh.
All his racing bikes.
Wow.
Kept them up.
Nice.
Tim was working at the motorcycle shop on Blue Avenue, that Hodaka shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I was buying his bikes, but they were maintaining that shop. And they had very successful careers. Well, then Jack hurt his knee. Mm. The doctor told him if he did it again, he wouldn't walk, he'd be crippled.
Oh, geez.
So he had to stop the motocross.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he and Bob moved into the race course.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bob thought I was going to drive the car too, but what I did the day they took the car to the race, I disappeared.
Oh, did you really?
I did. I did go at the beginning of the race, but I didn't go over there because I wanted him to drive the car. I wanted mm-hmm. them to develop,
mm-hmm.
and they did. And he went on to a super career in.
Boy, you're not kidding.
Late model.
Yeah, those Bob Space Racer cars, they were among the ones to beat all throughout the Southeast. Yeah, running against guys like Ballou and Junior Hanley and all those guys, David Rogers. I mean, you know, that team and your boy could hang with any of them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, Jack went on to super late models at New Smyrna. I was not driving.
Mm-hmm.
But he was racing at New Smyrna on a weekly basis. But every summer they went to Canada.
Oh, yeah.
And they worked at Canadian fair circus uh-huh. and all. And they were gone for three and a half, four months. He'd leave at the point leader, come back 200-400 points behind.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1980, the points went to the car.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Canada. I drove the car in 1980.
Really?
Through the summer.
Uh-huh.
He came back. He left. He was, I think, 100 and something points ahead. He mm-hmm. came back. He was 100 and something points behind. But he won the track championship.
Yeah.
In 1981,
wow.
He left. He was 100 and so points behind. He came back. He was a couple of 100 points ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And he won the championship again.
Amazing.
So 80 and 81, that's the New Smyrna track champion sitting there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how about that stuff, so huh? It runs in the family.
Well, that's about the highlight of my career was that 80 and 81.
Wow, that's great. And you kind of showed yourself that you could still wheel the car a little bit too, huh?
I could.
Yeah. Yeah, you never lose it. That's great.
I actually want to take a feature race down there.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, this has been tremendous. We really thank you so much for coming along and telling us all about that. And that transition between the bikes and then over to the stock cars is something that some drivers have done. Not too many of them have been successful, but you certainly have. And it's a fascinating story.
Well, I maybe could have done better. I felt like I could have done better.
Mm-hmm.
But it was family first, job second, and right. racing had to be third.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I was motorcycle racing, I was one broke cookie. I mean, I had barely enough money to get to the race.
But look at the fun you were having, though.
It was fun.
Did it help you to pick up the girls, too?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the girls like motorcycle racers?
Do what?
The girls liked motorcycle races, too?
I met my wife at a motorcycle race. She was infatuated with this motorcycle driver.
Well, there you go. That's all you need. That's awesome. Well, how about a big round of applause for Jack Cook? This has been absolutely fantastic, and we cannot thank you enough. Just great. And, you know, to find folks that have actually raced on the beach, you figure it's been 60 years, well, with motorcycles, 58 years since they raced on the beach here. And, you know, there's not too many of you fellas still around. So anytime we get a chance to find out, you know, what you did and how it was and all that, we want to be able to preserve that history. So we're not only entertaining, though, we're educating too. And you're so much a part of the history here, and we're preserving it for all time. And we thank you for your input.
Thank you for having me.
Really good.
But I was truly blessed with the people that I was around.
Yeah.
The people that I knew and Smokey and Ray and Marshall mm-hmm. Teak and
yeah.
all the top. Back then.
Yeah.
The top guys.
I'd like to see you write a book. I think it'd be a heck of a book. Yeah.
It could be, but.
Yeah.
Well,
we'll talk about that.
I probably blow my own horn every day than that.
Well, you did a great job of it today. Well, thank you, folks, for tuning in this week. And next week, we're going to have the Buzz Roast, right? Roland V is coming back as guest host. And It's the day after my birthday, so they thought it'd be real fun if they put me in this chair over here and had me squirm quite a bit. So we'll see. Yeah, well, anyway, I promise not to embarrass the family, Mom, all right? Unless an unfortunate incident in Mexico comes back up again. I don't know. But anyway, a few folks we have to thank you. Of course, we have to thank Walt and Rhonda from the North Turn for giving us a place to play every week. Now, absolutely. Now, you know, Walt is our roadie, and Rhonda is our assistant field director. And then we have Shane the Bolt, our engineer, B-O-L-T, Bolt. And then we have Richmond, who you're the ops manager now, right? He fixed my frame. Great. You're right on top of the job there. And let's see, we have Betty Crocker back there. Is there any more of that? Have you cranked up that cake yet? Okay, that's good. All righty. And let's see what we got here. We've got, of course, my dear beloved Gwendolyn over there, my wife, the buzz boss. I'll let her think that for a while, you know. And let's see here. We got, our intern, David, he's not here today. So he'll be here next week. And then also our photographer, Flash Bill Watson, is gone, too. He's on a honeymoon cruise. It's his 38th honeymoon. And it's so funny. I said, where are you going? He said, I really don't know. I said, what do you mean? He said, yeah, I just told my wife to book a cruise, and she never told me where we're going. So we got to find out next week. You got to tune in next week to see where they went on their cruise, right? And then I'm your genial host, Buzz, I'm not worthy. And then our grand poobah, let me tell you, he's a benevolent dictator, this guy. He takes care of his underlings. He put together this nice little book for me today with all my notes in it. I was kind of scattered before then, but he made sure that I tightened up, right? We appreciate that. That's another life lesson. Much obliged. And our scribe, Lenny, is not here today, but we might give him the boot if he doesn't straighten up, right? Okay. Well, anyway, thank you, folks, and we'll see you here next week, and it should be fun.
The Legends of Racing Radio Show originates live from the very spot where beach racing began, Racing's North Turn Beach Bar and Grill. Join us next time for the Legends of Racing Radio Show with Buzz McKim.